Yeah, that's why I was thrown off.
There you go.
Yes. Hello, I'm Kimberly Adams. Welcome back to Make Me Smart, where we attempt to make today make some form of some kind of sense.
The key phrase there is attempt to make sense. Yeah, we'll see. Yeah, I'm Kyle Risnall. It is Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. As with many Thursdays past, I'm going into it not feeling too bad, but we'll see how sideways this thing goes in the next 15 minutes. I couldn't even tell you.
Yeah, I think we've got a good mix coming up.
Unknowns.
Yeah. And, you know, to think positively about it, this is totally random. You know, those Easter bunnies are hollow but they're chocolate. And so being hollow isn't always bad if you're chocolate. You know, it can also be delicious.
Today, in non sequiturs. Yeah, sure. Let's go with that. Oh, that's funny. That is
okay.
Funny.
Well, why don't you go first?
Because right.
mine are kind of grim.
Yeah, that's fair enough. I'll go first. And I will point out two news items, which everybody will surely have heard of by the time they hear this podcast. But I do want to present a perhaps negative spin on these two key news items. The first one, of course, is that the White House and a bipartisan group of 10 senators, 5 Democrats, 5 Republicans, said today on the White House driveway that they have agreed to a give or take $1 trillion infrastructure plan. We should be clear here. This is hard infrastructure. It's not any of the things that the White House wanted with child care and all those other sort of supporting things that aren't bridges and roads. So that's item one, right? Infrastructure plan. Item two is that the House Judiciary Committee last night worked, I think it was like 17 or 18 hours in a row, doing what's called a markup of 6 bills that will regulate big tech. And by big tech, we're talking like 4 or 5 companies, right? Facebook, Google, Apple, couple others.
Amazon.
Amazon, right. Thank you. They passed 5 of the 6, which will now go to further debate in the House. Here is my thematic inference from both of these bills. There were many huzzas about Infrastructure Week and how we have a deal. The president literally said, we have a deal. And there is bipartisan agreement on these big tech regulatory bills. I would just like to suggest that we are a long way from anywhere with these bills. The toughest part of infrastructure has not been decided yet, how it's going to be paid for. Lots of vague promises and a one sheet that says, here's where the money is going to come from. I don't know that I buy that. And number two, this technology package has to get through the full House, but also, more to the point, the Senate of the United States. So progress, yes. Ain't nothing a done deal yet. And I just want to make sure people, when they read these stories, are thinking about it at least a little bit cynically, you know?
Yeah, I'm inclined to agree with you on that we're very far from anything actually being done. But I also think that the passage of those sort of first round for the tech overhaul, and then also this big display at the White House about this infrastructure deal, is about optics. It's very clear that the Biden administration and the president himself really, really wants to demonstrate that it is possible to get things done in a bipartisan way, something, even if it's not what you want. And if you go back and listen to his speech today, he was like, you know, I didn't get everything that I wanted, and they didn't get everything that they wanted, but this is how it's supposed to work. And this is not how the progressives in the Democratic Party want things to work. They are getting increasingly frustrated with the president and his administration, saying we have this narrow window where we can ram things through, just like the Republicans ram things through, and you're not fully utilizing it. Instead, you're doing this compromise thing that doesn't get us as far as we need to go. And I think that's going to be the big headbutting issue moving forward, because There weren't too many folks in the progressive wing singing the praises of said deal today. And
that is absolutely true.
It will be fascinating if they get in line moving forward. Yep. So
totally.
Lots to see there.
Yeah.
So
all right, over to you, because those are mine too.
Yeah, so I have also two on a theme, because it's Thursday, we can have themes. And they're both about the pandemic. Alliteration. I can't resist it.
Nope.
about the pandemic, and I've been saying all my stuff about like hot vax summer and everything reopening and all the things that everybody's doing, but it's still really, really bad in so many parts of the world. And I went out for a short walk today and passed the mass vaccination center in my neighborhood with no lines. And they're like, anybody over 12, come in and get a vaccine. You don't need an appointment or anything. And that just really put in stark focus this piece that I saw in the Washington Post about not just how bad the pandemic and the virus is in India, but also the after effects of this particular new variant or just the way that things are playing out there. A lot of people in India are getting this deadly black fungus after they, like flesh-eating fungus, after they recover from COVID. And it's causing hundreds of people to either die or force them to have their eye removed. And it's an incredibly compelling, I'm sorry, you just clicked on it, and I should warn people the first image is probably...
Could have come with a warning. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Sorry about that.
It's all right. It's
incredibly compelling photography, really amazing stories of not just what's happening with this particular fungus that's affecting people who've recovered from COVID, but also just the strain on the infrastructure. They're getting ready for potentially a new wave. And then if you go over to Brazil, Brazil just passed 500,000 COVID fatalities, and it doesn't seem to be letting up. This piece in the New York Times says that Brazil is home to just over 2.7% of the world's population, but nearly 13% of the recorded fatalities. They've had a really terrible government response, and thousands of people are dying every day. And I remember what it felt like here when we had thousands of people dying every day, but we knew that it was about to hopefully get better. You know, when we passed 500,000 people and Biden had just come into office and there's that ceremony on the National Mall and the vaccines were coming and there was a plan. And if you read the coverage coming out of Brazil, they don't seem to have that kind of hope. No. It just seems to keep getting worse. And we are moving on towards reopening, but as long as there's these global inequities, it is going to be years and years before we really get out of this pandemic and its different variants. And, you know, I was thinking about, oh, well, maybe I can have some family over for 4th of July, you know, but all the adults are vaccinated, but the kids aren't. So is that safe? Can I do that? Is that a good idea? What if, you know, the new variants are around and somebody gives it to one of the kids? I'll never forgive myself. It's a lot.
Yeah. And it's not. Yeah, totally. And we're not, you know, it's really funny because people are like, oh, yeah, pandemic's over. And people talk about it in the past tense. And I'm like, no, it's not.
Not in the tiniest bit.
Don't do that. Not in the tiniest bit.
And I was on the phone with somebody from my hometown of St. Louis, as I mentioned on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And Missouri is like a hot spot for COVID outbreaks now because there's such a low vaccination rate. And, you know, my friend was telling me about fighting with her own family members to get them to get vaccinated. I have people in my family who refuse to get vaccinated, refuse and don't even want to talk about it with people. And
crazy.
I don't know what to do with this.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. I would like to smile, though.
Yes. So let's do that. Let's do that. All right. I went first with the news. You go first with a smile.
Oh, my gosh. I love the story so much. So it's a piece in the Philadelphia Inquirer, which is about the wonderful, wonderful images that came out of the Olympic trials, I think.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yes.
This was incredible. Yeah.
Wasn't it, though? So
it was amazing.
No, I mean, it's an exciting thing. So Sha'Carri Richardson did the 100 meters in 10.65 seconds and... She was just so joyful. She was so joyful. And she's so embraced who she was it was a performance. It was a performance and just sort of like Simone Biles being out there with a goat on her leotard and just exuberant and joy. And but what's great about this article is it talks about, let me just say, the headline is "Cheer for Black Girls with Orange Hair, Long Nails, Tats, and Lashes." And all of these things are sort of these, if taken in a negative context, the stereotypical representation of Black women, particularly in cities, that would make people judge them or view them as low class not professional or not anything good. And for her to walk out there with her full self and just completely blow the stereotypes out of the water and say, if you're thinking that way about me because of this, then you're the one who's wrong. I'm the one who just ran 100 meters in 10.65 seconds. Yeah. And then she went up into the stands and hugged her grandma. And it was just the most beautiful thing. And it makes me cry every time I see it. And she just gave a really amazing, I know Molly's, this would definitely make Molly cry for real.
Oh, there would be tears. Yeah,
and
for sure.
There would be a lot of tears. And she also just gave this really amazing interview talking about how she found out a week prior that her biological mother died and she still showed up. She still showed up. Yep. She still performed and put herself out there. And there wasn't always a space for that. And people made that space, people like her. And I just thought that was amazing. And it definitely made me smile.
Yeah. It was great. Okay, it was great. That whole thing, I happened to have been watching that. And it was amazing to see. It was totally amazing. Yes. You're absolutely right.
Yes.
Absolutely right. All right. Mine is, I'm a history geek. And so I'm just going to lean into this one. There was a piece in the New York Times a couple of days ago about Rembrandt's Night Watch, a very famous painting. And its restoration, which has been going on for like 3 years now to the tune of many multi-millions of dollars. The thing I did not realize, but the cool part of this restoration was that back in, so the thing was painted in like the late 1600s. In early 1700 and something, they cut off 2 feet of it to fit it into like City Hall or something. So it would fit on the wall, right? So first of all, oh my God, you cut off 2 feet of this thing? But what they've done now is with some pixel by pixel analysis of a copy of it that was done before it got chopped up, they have basically restored it to its full size using AI. And it's just the coolest freaking thing. And I'm, you know, I'm no art guy. I'm no connoisseur of anything. But I thought this was just really cool. Number one, history. Number two, technology. And it was neat. It's in the New York Times. Rembrandt's Night Watch. And I recommend it to you. It's really cool. It's really cool.
You know? It's so cool. And I thought it was interesting that they had someone else around the time that it was originally painted made a copy of it, which helped them kind of figure out what should be there. But they didn't think it was a good enough representation. And so it was actually the AI that really figured out how it was supposed to look. And good luck if you're somebody whose job it is to figure out if something's an art forgery or not moving forward.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Really cool. Anyway, cool little story. Cool little story.
Yeah, so it was really cool.
Richardson, we got Rembrandt. There we go. Boom.
I love it.
Out of here.
All right. Yeah, excellent. So don't forget to sign up for the Make Me Smart newsletter. This week, we'll look at how The Fast and the Furious became a Hollywood mega tentpole. The first movie came out 20 years ago this week. That feels some kind of way. And the new one is out Friday.
Wow. Holy cow. Holy cow.
Back tomorrow. I appreciate that time reference.
Well, I know, right? I mean, think about how long that franchise has lasted. Anyway, back tomorrow, Economics on Tap, YouTube live stream. Kimberly's in for Molly again, 3:30 Pacific, 6:30 Eastern. I imagine we'll have comments in the YouTube. And what's the other one? Starts with a D. Help
Discord.
Me out. Oh, my God.
Discord.
I was like, disparage, distant, whatever. God. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Marissa Cabrera. Today's program was engineered by Charlton Thorpe. Bridget Bodner is the senior producer around here.
Erica produces our Make Me Smart explainers and writes them as well, as along with our weekly newsletter, where you can send all your reading recommendations. Tony Wagner takes care of all of our podcast publishing needs, including your favorite, the show notes.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too.
Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.